Hello, and welcome to the Spooky Chris podcast. My name is Chris Ringler, and this is a very special episode because I'll be joined by Dr. Scott Bahn, a criminologist, author, producer, and podcaster. He will be in Flint on October 19th for Serial Killers with Dr. Scott Bahn. It's going to be a pretty great show. Today, he's going to be talking about serial killers and how he got into the profession of studying them, and I'm really excited to speak with him, so stay tuned.
Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Scott Bahn. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for inviting me.
It is an absolute pleasure. Now, first and foremost, you are going to be in the Flint area on October 19th for an event called the Serial Killers with Dr. Scott Bahn. Can you tell me a little about this?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to come there to the film, and my show is approximately 90 minutes in length. It's an interactive show, an audience interactive show, in that I have a Q&A session in the second act in which people can ask any and every question they ever wanted to know about serial killers. And that gets to be really dynamic and fun because you just never know what questions you're going to get. But more generally, what I seek to do is to take the audience inside the minds of these diabolical individuals. What drives them? What compels them? And also, how do they evolve? How do they become the monsters that exist among us that they do become? So I look at the evolution as well. And even more specifically, I take them inside the minds of some of the most diabolical characters of the 20th and 21st century, based upon my actual experiences with these individuals and these cases. And I'm talking about such individuals as David Berkowitz, the infamous Son of Sam serial killer, Dennis Rader, the also infamous Bind, Torture, Kill, or BTK strangler, and more recently, Rex Huerman, the alleged Long Island serial killer in New York, who terrorized Long Island for many, many years. And these are all based upon my actual interactions with these individuals, these cases. So it's unique in that I'm providing a window into their diabolical minds through my actual interactions with them.
That's amazing. How, if you don't mind me asking, how did you get interested and involved in criminology?
Sure. Well, that's also a great question. And I've been fascinated by the human condition and what motivates people ever since I was a boy. And I was interested in the dark side and the good. You know, why do people do the good things? And then why, you know, do some people turn to the dark side? And I was a fan of monster movies and horror films when I was a kid. But then when it came time to go off to college, I had to make a decision about, you know, what was I going to major in? And I was kind of torn between studying marketing and learning, you know, about why people buy Coca-Cola versus Pepsi, and criminology. So what I decided to do is study both. So I double majored. And but then my parents told me, you know what, there's probably more money in advertising, so why don't you do that? So for about 20 years, in fact, I worked in New York City. I moved from the Midwest. I grew up in Ohio. I moved to New York City. And I worked in various roles in media, entertainment, and advertising, culminating in a stint at NBC Television Network, where I worked in marketing, and I was helping to promote the primetime shows at that time, as well as the nightly news. And that's where I realized that there's an old journalistic adage that if it bleeds, it leads is truly accurate. And the stories that catch fire are the ones that are the most juicy and sensationalized. And at that time, back in the 90s, we're talking about the Menendez brothers, the Johnny Versace murder, and of course, O.J. Simpson. And what I noticed is how many times the perpetrator in these cases becomes the focus of the story and not the victims. And they become what I like to call celebrity And I found that both very interesting as well as a bit disheartening. But later on, after 9/11, I was motivated to study criminology and justice after the terrible events of 9/11. I became a college professor. It's still in New York City. I was a professor at Drew University, a criminology professor there for about 15 years. And I noticed that anytime the words serial killer or Ted Bundy or Jeffrey Dahmer came out of my mouth, my students jumped out of their chairs with glee and excitement. And this is where I sort of put it all together. I brought my background in entertainment and news together with my studying of serial killers, their motivations, and criminology. And that culminated into what I'm doing now, which is coming out and talking directly to audiences, to true crime fans about serial killers and their fascination with them. So I've sort of brought the two parts of my career together into, one show.
Fantastic. Now, how have you seen the study of serial killers change since you first started kind of examining them?
Well, the technology, technology just keeps getting better and better, and it is enabling these individuals to be captured earlier and more quickly than they once were. And I'm particularly talking about DNA. And DNA, even though it seems like it's been with us forever, really was introduced in 1986. That's when it was first utilized for crime detection and apprehension. And it was just a tremendous game changer, because many serial killers were, unbeknownst to them, leaving clues and their DNA behind, never knowing that it could be used against them. And so suddenly you have cold cases, like recently the Golden State Killer in California, that had been a cold case for decades. And this old man, Joseph DeAngelo, thought he had gotten away with it, but he was finally apprehended after decades. How? Of all things, through ancestry DNA. I mean, that tool that we use to find our long lost cousin in Toledo is exactly the way that they captured him. And others, the Long Island serial killer, the case that I mentioned that I was involved in, and BTK, they were all captured as a result of DNA. So that's been a huge game changer. Also, I'd like to point out that technology and innovation has also fueled, I think, the interest in true crime. It's allowed people now to almost embed themselves into it. You have these web sleuths, who get involved in the story real time, and in some cases have actually been instrumental in helping cases to be solved. So the public is involved and engaged, and it's all just sort of come together to a point where I think technology, has both enhanced the ability to apprehend these individuals, and while it's fueling our tremendous fascination with the cases.
How have you seen serial killers themselves change with the culture?
Well, the serial killers, here's what's happening, is that the less successful ones and the less skilled, if you want to call this a skill, are the ones that are being apprehended more quickly. And it's very difficult these days to become a long-term, prolific, successful serial killer. So it's really the ones who are able to avoid mistakes that are the ones that are able to be successful. To answer your question and to put this in perspective for your audience, serial killers are becoming very rare. I mean, they're almost like the albino rhinoceros, in some ways. And what I mean by that is there were more than 600 serial killers active in the United States in the 1970s. By the 1980s, that escalated to more than 800, based upon the detection skills, the improving profiling skills and apprehension and DNA in the 1980s. Now, the numbers have dwindled dramatically. In 2020s, this current decade, there have been between 2 and 3 dozen serial killers identified in the United States. So you can see the numbers, you know, it's 10 times less serial killers than were active just a few decades ago. And it's all as a result of this increasing technology, understanding, innovation that's taking place. And I'll go so far as to say this, it's not that the logical seeds that are planted in nature versus nurture, because it's a combination of hardwiring at birth, abnormal wiring, as well as socialization and upbringing that leads one to become these individuals in the first place. And I'm not suggesting that that has left the human condition. I'm just suggesting that we are getting so much better at detecting them early on and apprehending them. And I'll take it even a step further. And that is, I think many a fledgling wannabe serial killer is at being apprehended after their first murder, before they even go on to attain the serial killer status, before their second victim or third victim. And an excellent example here that I think could well fall into this category is the case of Brian Koberger. Many people may be aware of him. He's charged with the mass murder of 4 college students in Idaho. And now I've looked at his evolution very, very closely, his progression into killing. And I believe that had he not been apprehended, and assuming that he's guilty, and I'm 99.9% sure that he is, because they have DNA linking him, that there's an excellent chance he would have gone on to become a serial killer himself. And let's not forget that if that is the case, or if that were to be the case, and he started out as a mass murderer and became a serial killer, that's also identical to the profile of Dennis Rader, BTK, bind, torture, kill. He did the same thing. He committed the mass murder of a family before he became a serial killer. And let's also not forget that the reason that Brian Koberger was caught in the first place is because he is a dummy. And what I mean by that is he left a knife sheath with his DNA lying next to one of his 4 victims. If that's not a rookie error, I don't know what is. So I think he may well fall into that wannabe category and just never attained it.
Have you seen any kind of like crossover between mass shooters and serial killers in what makes them tick?
You know, it's a great question. And it is true, as serial killers are on the decline, sadly and unfortunately, mass shootings are escalating. These public shootings are escalating. I know there's mixed information and there's people debate, but I'm going to tell you from my perspective, and I study this stuff every day, mass shootings are on the rise, unfortunately. But no, there is no crossover here. There is no common area. And the reason for that is this: serial killers are motivated by almost like an internal visceral hunger that compels them to kill. They don't kill out of anger. They don't care. They don't kill out of revenge or retribution or anything like that. They kill because it satisfies them. It is the greatest thrill and satisfaction of their lives, and they want to do it again and again and again. If anything, they escalate. They do it more quickly and more horrifically to up the ante in the thrills. That's very different than a mass shooter who typically is a fatalistic individual who has no exit strategy and actually intends to die at the scene of the crime. And more than half of them do. More than half of mass shooters are either turn the gun on themselves or they're shot and it's called suicide by cop. Oftentimes they're killed by the police and they want to die. Why? They're angry at the world. They are pissed off. Oftentimes it's directed toward a particular group, a school, an organization, sometimes even a racial or ethnic group that they feel has harmed them in some way, a sexual orientation, a religious group, and they are striking back. In their mind, they are righting a wrong. And you have done me wrong, and you will remember me, and I'm going to go out in a blaze of my own glory. That's very much the mind of a mass shooter. And you can see how different that is than a serial killer. So no, I would not say that serial killers are just being replaced by mass shooters. It's really a very different motivation.
Okay. What has been the most interesting case you've been a part of?
excuse me. Probably the most interesting actual investigation was the Long Island serial killer, because it allowed me to put together a profile back in 2011. The New York Times newspaper reached out to me. I was a college professor there in New York at the time, and this was after all these bodies were discovered there on Gilgo Beach. And I put together a profile that turns out 13 years later, when he was apprehended, my profile was 100% accurate to every detail, even down to him being a meticulous, educated, highly educated planner. And he was an architect. He had blueprints for murder. So that was very satisfying and very interesting to be involved in. But in terms of who is the most interesting character that I actually met, most diabolical, scary character, it would have to be Dennis Rader, BTK, Bind, Torture, Kill. Because here you are talking about a stone cold psychopath and what is known as a malignant narcissist. Now, what a malignant narcissist is an individual who has all the classic symptoms of a narcissist, which are just unable to see the world through any other lens than how it affects themselves and how they might benefit from it. But it adds, the malignant aspect is sadism. They have a profound sadism. And you put that together with his psychopathic tendencies, which are he's completely unplugged empathetically and emotionally from other people. He sees people as just toys to play with and then destroy. And you can see what a toxic combination that is, which is why he called himself Bind, Torture, Kill, which is exactly what he did. That was his MO, which was find them, bind them, torture them, and then kill them, extinguish them. And he, probably the most frightening thing that I ever heard, the words that ever came from a serial killer or, frankly, any human being, was his answer to me when I asked him why he killed that family of four and why he saved the 11-year-old little girl for last and in that family, made her watch as he killed her parents and her brother, made her watch, and then took her into the basement and hanged her from the ceiling in the basement, sat in front of her, watched her choke and suffer and die, and then actually sexually gratified himself, masturbated on her dead body. And I asked him, why did you do this? And he said, because in that moment as she died, I knew that I was God.
Wow. Holy cow. Now, you are a writer amongst everything else. Can you tell me about your book, Why We Love Serial Killers?
Yeah. Well, in many ways, this book forms the basis and was really the jump start into my own live show, because this book, and it's ironically titled Why We Love Serial Killers, and I have had people tell me this, you know, oh my God, I love this stuff, but then there's a second part to the title, which is it's the curious appeal of the world's most savage murderers. And what it gets to is just the public fascination with these individuals. You know, how is it that Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, Son of Sam, BTK, have become part of our public discourse, have become almost iconic symbols of evil? You know, if you ask somebody, what's a symbol of evil? They're liable to say Ted Bundy or Jeffrey Dahmer. So they're embedded in our very popular culture. And so my book is as much a look at our fascination with them and how they become these celebrity monsters, as I like to call them. But at the same time, my book also answers everything you ever ever wanted to know about serial killers, but maybe were afraid to ask. In fact, that's an entire section of the book is titled just that. So it's a combination. I call it a pop culture true crime book because it could be interesting, I believe, to someone who is not necessarily a true crime fan, but seeks to understand our fascination with the dark side and monsters and so forth. But then if you're a true crime fan, it really takes you deep inside the minds of these individuals too. And I've been so gratified because my book is used at colleges and universities. It's used in sociology classes. It's used in criminology classes. It's used in communications classes at universities. But then it's also very much been embraced by the general public. And I was hoping that it might have that sort of crossover appeal because I was a college professor at the time. I'm doing my show full time now, but I was a college professor when I wrote it, and I wrote it hopefully that it would have that sort of broad appeal, and I'm very gratified that, you know, so far it seems to have been the case.
That's amazing. Now, you wrote a crime thriller as well called Evil Guardian. Have you thought about writing any more fiction?
To the extent that time permits, I'm pretty busy right now. My agent is keeping me very busy with we've got about 45 shows that wow. He's lined up. So he's keeping me very busy. But yeah, you mentioned Evil Guardian, and that is it's a work of fiction, but it's based upon my actual experiences and reflections and things that I learned through actual cases that I created this composite character called the Evil Guardian. And it's kind of like turning Son of Sam on his head, because Son of Sam was motivated by Satan to kill the real Son of Sam. This guy, the Evil Guardian, is believing that God is motivating him to kill and to send innocent victims back to him before they're tarnished by the world and the evils of the world. So it's almost like taking Son of Sam and turning him upside down.
That's interesting. Now, and you say you're how busy you are. You also have a podcast, The Killing Hour with Doc Bond. Now, how did you get involved with that?
I was working with a group Partners in True Crime is the name of the company, and they approached me about doing this podcast. So again, when time permits, we're on a hiatus right now, that was a really fascinating experience as well. So yeah, this journey has just had so many twists and turns as it unfolds. And I love it. You know, to me, there's nothing more fun than being out with a live audience and seeing their reactions, allowing them to ask questions, getting engaged and involved. Because as an academic, I mean, that's sort of the way I approach these things. You know, you're in your little silo, writing and sending out, your written material, and you don't necessarily know how it's being received. But when you actually perform it, present it live, you get to see the actual reactions to it. And that's a pretty cool opportunity.
Absolutely. Now, serial killer is still a lot of your headspace. What do you do to kind of clear them out and to kind of refresh yourself so that's not just all that's in there?
Well, that's thank you so much. I mean, I'm blessed to have an amazing wife and a son and a beautiful Weimaraner dog named Maggie. And so, we have adventures together, and my wife is actually traveling with me on this tour because it's too much for me to do everything myself. And so she's my partner. And so it's a great way to travel the country, and she happens to be from another country. She's from China originally. So she's seeing cities that she probably never would have otherwise even seen. So we're having quite the adventure together, as we travel the country and go to all these different cities.
That's amazing. Being from Ohio, have you been kind of in the Flint area ever?
When I grew up, I grew up in Cleveland. I actually grew up in Cleveland, and so yes, as a boy, we frequently would travel across the lake, go up to Michigan, so I am familiar. It's going to be the first time that I've been back in a long time, and actually, I'm going to be going to Ohio too. I've got
awesome.
Dates coming up in Dayton and Akron, Dayton later this year, Akron next year. So it's going to be a great opportunity to reconnect with the Midwest, because I spent most of my career, both my media and my teaching career, in New York. I now live in Las Vegas, Nevada, but I frankly just haven't gotten back to the Midwest a whole lot. So it's a great opportunity.
That's amazing, and we're excited that you're going to be out here. I don't want to keep you much longer. How can people track all of your information down? What is your website, sir?
Sure. Well, thanks for asking once again. And my website is docbonn.com, and I'll spell that out, docbonn.com. And that has all relevant information to my books and my writings, but it also has a complete listing of all the upcoming tour dates, including Flint, with links to the websites to purchase tickets for those dates, should you be interested and should you be in the area and want to come. And I also am at DocBond22 on Instagram, and I am at DocBond on Twitter, or X as well. I also have I write a blog for Psychology Today. And if you go to the Psychology Today website and you Google or search Wicked Deeds, that's the name of my blog column. And I've got a couple hundred articles there that I've written about, a lot about serial killers, but about other aspects of crime and criminology as well. So those are several different ways people can stay in touch.
That's amazing. And again, you're going to be in Flint at the FIM Capitol Theater on October 19th for Serial Killers with Dr. Scott Bond. And I cannot thank you enough, sir, for making some time to talk to me. Thank you so much.
It's absolutely my pleasure, and I look forward to seeing everyone there.
Thank you, sir. You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
I want to thank Dr. Scott Bond for making some time to speak with me. That was a fantastic conversation. And just a reminder, he is going to be in Flint on October 19th for an 8 p.m. show, and that is Serial Killers with Dr. Scott Bond. That's at the FIM Capitol Theater. If you are into true crime or serial killers or the study of criminology, this is the show for you. It's going to be pretty great. There is a 30 to 50% discount for Genesee County residents as part of the Genesee County Arts, Education, and Cultural Enrichment. That is an amazing deal. And seriously, if you are into this study, this is the show for you. Again, that is October 19th at the FIM Capitol Theater, Serial Killers with Dr. Scott Bond. Thanks again for listening. That was amazing. If you want to hear more of my podcast, go to spookychris.com. You can find all my blogs, my links to the many books I've written, my reviews, and everything else. Thanks again. I will talk to you soon.